Ready? Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday, May 8th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. And we have several pieces of business to take up that are very important today. And we do have Senator Winters in the room to testify. So I will start by opening a public hearing and work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 17. And Lori, if you'd please tell us about this one.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Concurrent Resolution 17 memorializes Michael McLaren, who lived from 1960 to 2013. There is no revenue or fiscal impact on the measure.
Good morning, Senator Winters.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Rules Committee.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, I want to thank you for hearing.
I feel like this is sometimes.
You just feel like a coach. It's kind of hard to talk about someone in your community that we are honoring that has been such a integral force in its leadership, not only for the Salem community, but for the state. And in thinking about, and you have before you all the whereases and all the things that he accomplished, but I want to share with you the impact and the imprint that he left on this community. There were over 1,000 individuals who attended his service here in Salem, which actually demonstrates the depth and breadth of the lives of people that Mike McLaren touched. Those of us who knew him, that it was more than just being the executive director of a chamber. It was his whole commitment to a quality of life, not only here in Salem, but in the state of Oregon. His commitment to working with the education community to make certain that our children were being educated. His commitment to making certain that we were developing a future workforce. He was one of these individuals, and I was thinking, not only was he his compassion about a quality of life in Oregon in the positive, but also his ability to bring individuals together in order to get a task done. And those are qualities of a leader who steps outside of their personal self for the betterment and the good of all. And that was Mike McLaren. I think that was so demonstrated when Senator Courtney and I attended the service, and there was no room to be held in the sanctuary of these thousands of individuals who came to pay their respects. And it's that same respect that I think those of us in this chamber who we honor individuals who have contributed so much. His life was short to die at 53 years of age. It was very sudden. He was out jogging in the community. If you had seen him, you would have said he was physically fit. He jogged every day, and his life was taken from us. But his memories will not be taken, and the work that he's done in this community and this state, I think, will live on. And I ask that you unanimously work session this and send it to our floor to honor. You will also note that I think, with the exception of one member who was not available at the time, every member in this chamber have signed on to this memorial, and the House chamber. When I sent it over to the House with Representative Cameron, the response was, we also want to be major sponsors on this bill to show you the individuals who were involved. So you will see not only with Representative Cameron, but Representative Clem and Berger and those of us in the Valley who have worked with him. And so it tells you how much we think about this particular individual.
Thank you very much, Senator Winters, and thank you for bringing his memory to life for us. And did anyone have any comments or questions for the senator before we let her get back to her
other duties?
Thank you again.
Thank you for hearing it.
And I think we are in a work session, so Senator Ferrioli, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Concurrent Resolution 17 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Ferrioli has moved Senate Concurrent Resolution 17 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. And we will ask Senators Winters and Senator Courtney, who are the chief sponsors, to carry this on the floor. And I'll close the public hearing and work session on SCR 17. And I'll open a public hearing and work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 3. And Lori, would you like to tell us about this one?
I would be honored, Madam Chair. Senate Concurrent Resolution 3 memorializes the life of Emily Georges Gottfried, who lived from 1955 to 2013. There is no revenue and no impact, fiscal impact on the measure or on the Dash 1 amendment, which is, you have a hard copy attached, and that amendment specifically references Emily Gottfried's ecumenism, her efforts against intolerance, and her advocacy against hunger.
Thank you, Lori. And we do have several people signed up to testify. And I will call them as panels, and we'll start with David Leslie, Rabbi Michael Kahana, and Selma Ahmed. If the three of you would like to come forward. We have... Morning. Thank you for waiting so patiently.
Would it be appropriate to ask Mary Jo Tully, Chancellor of the Archdiocese, to join this panel also?
Sure. That would be great. We can pull up another chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good morning again, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. My name is David Leslie. I'm the Executive Director of Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. EMO is a statewide ecumenical association of Christian denominations, congregations, community ministries, and interfaith partners working around the state for the health and wellness of all Oregonians. On behalf of EMO, I'm here today in support of SCR 3, honoring Emily Gottfried for her life in her work and service to all Oregonians. Emily was a Jewish woman of faith and a great Oregonian whose life centered on service and support of the holy ends of justice, peace, equity, and unity for all people. Through her interfaith commitments, she ensured that religious dialogue was central to our life together and that we built relations with other sectors of the society for service and advocacy. This is clearly seen through her work in Washington County with the Interreligious Action Committee Network and the Interfaith Portland Council for Greater Portland. Her deep concern for the health and wellness of all Oregonians also led her to help start the Oregon Faith Roundtable Against Hunger. And as you know from the resolution, she was very involved with the Coalition Against Hate Crimes Interfaith Advocacy Day. But her interests also extend on to the international scene, for example, working with the Save Darfur Coalition. She was a tireless advocate for equity and for socioeconomic benefit for all. But I also think I wanted to add today, particularly for this setting in this building today, Emily was a firm believer in the democratic process and the importance of civil discourse in the public square. I had the privilege of working with Emily on numerous bills, legislative efforts, community development, things around the state. And I can testify to this truth that she never shied away from a tough issue, no matter how divisive it might seem to be. But she always found a way of bringing together differing viewpoints for thoughtful dialogue and drawing us beyond our parochial interests to the interests of the good of all. Her leadership in the public arena was oftentimes very refreshing and a very good counterpoint to the vitriol that we found both in the public arena, but I have to also add in our own religious houses. As I witnessed time and time again, she ensured that all perspectives were respectfully shared And we really did take the time to listen to one another, even in disagreement, and doing that, modeling something better in the community at large. With all that as a background, I really do urge your support for SCR 3. Oregon was gifted with the life of Emily Gottfried. The one thing with people who gift others is that her spirit, while she's physically not with us, continues to live on in the work that we are all about. This morning, it's really an honor to have with us, and I guess we'll just go down the row here, the Chancellor from the Archdiocese, Mary Jo Tully. Following Mary Jo will be Rabbi Kahana from Congregation Beth Israel. And then our fourth speaker will be Salma Ahmed, who is the president of the Islamic Society for Greater Portland. I think just having these three individuals here today testify to the catalytic being of Emily Gottfried.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Farioli, and members of the Senate Rules Committee. My name is Mary Jo Tully, and I am a Chancellor of the Catholic Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Full disclosure, Emily was my good friend. But it seems very natural that members of the faith community would gather in Salem to support SCR 3 to honor Emily. Those of us who work within the faith communities in Oregon come into contact with socially concerned and compassionate individuals on a regular basis, and so do you. We meet people who advocate for the hungry, who speak for the homeless, those discriminated against, the poor, and the vulnerable. But those of you who have met Emily know as well as we do that she was not your ordinary supporter of a particular population or a single cause. She was not a lobbyist with several issues. Emily had only one cause and one issue. Emily was an advocate for a broken world. Her special mission was repairing the earth. Wherever Emily went, she united people in the vision she had of a better world. When she came to the seminary to talk to my students, we heard the depth of her faith in Judaism. At the demonstration Seder, we heard the Passover story address the needs of all who seek freedom. Serving on committees together, she made it obvious that she saw that helping those who are in need, no matter in what capacity, is holy work. And in that same spirit of repairing the world, Emily worked in all communities with people of many faiths and people of no religious faith. She touched the roots of their human compassion and the faith they have in one another. Wherever Emily was, she brought people together, and she continued to nurture those relationships. She loved to introduce those that she already loved to other people she loved. We knew her family, we knew her friends, and suddenly we found ourselves a part of every group to which she belonged. Many met her because of a shared interest in just one cause. Once you met Emily, because you liked one of her projects, you became engaged in other restorative acts. Her ideas became yours. She didn't have to ask us to join in a project. We asked her. Like the time I heard that the American Jewish Committee was sending solar ovens to Darfur. It seemed quite natural to me that I should call Emily and ask her if we Catholics could become part of that Jewish effort. Emily knew that it is a human responsibility to change, improve, and work for the betterment of the world. And part of her belongs to each of us. And that part of Emily is going to continue. We will try to do what Emily did. We know that none of us is Emily, and we mourn her loss, but part of her remains. Wherever she went, she left behind enduring relationships. And while she healed the world, she repaired all of us. She made us want to be better people. She made us want to be like her. And SCR 3 is our promise.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Farrelly, and all members of the Senate Committee. I'm Rabbi Michael Kahana, Senior Rabbi of Congregation Beth Israel in Portland, one of the largest synagogues in Oregon. And I'm really honored to be here to have a chance just to share very briefly. It has to be really briefly because Chancellor Tully really said so much and really has known Emily for so long. I've had the I want to echo what Chancellor Tully said and just and what David Leslie said. Just the fact that this group can be sitting here today is a testament to Emily Gottfried. I think there are few people in the state who could bring this kind of grouping together, and it speaks to her vision. I've, as a senior rabbi, I've officiated at quite a few funerals. I have seen very, very few celebrations of life as the one for Emily Gottfried, which was held in our congregation. We were just the house. It was filled with song, and it was filled with joy, and it was filled with people from so many different religious backgrounds that I felt like I was a little bit on the sideline. I could represent part of the Jewish community. But Emily wanted people around her from all different faiths, from all different traditions, from all different ideals, and she was the bridge. I worry without Emily's presence of what that bridge is going to be today. But all of us who are here are really inspired by the work that she did to continue to bring together people of different faiths, different ideas, different traditions. And one element that was so important was that Emily united us all in song. That was really Emily. You could always count on a guitar being picked up and a song being held. In her last days, as I visited her in the hospital, I knew that there was just a parade of people who came in and sat with her, more importantly, sang with her. And they sang from different faiths, from different traditions, different languages, and that was the way of uniting that really Emily brought about. She reminded us that dialogue was always the first step, that we should always be able to speak together, and that we should always be able to find where we are in common and find the places where we are not in common, and not be afraid to be able to speak to those elements. I think we can all use that. We can use it in the political world. We can use it in our religious world. We can use it in many different realms. I want to acknowledge also here the presence of Emily's husband, Jeff Gottfried, who just tried to stand by as the enormous force of Emily brought so many people together, and a more loving and honored relationship you couldn't ask for. They were truly a model of a beautiful couple that were united with a certain vision. Oregon was really honored to have in our midst someone like Emily Gottfried, and by recognizing her as we do in this resolution, I believe that the state is saying that this is what Oregon stands for, this ability to unite our people of very different backgrounds, to be able to speak together, to be able to dialogue together, to be able to sing together, is truly an Oregon value. And I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Rosenbaum, Ms. Brocker, Senators, I'm Salma Ahmed, and I'm President of the Islamic Society of Greater Portland, as well as I'm one of the founders of Bilal Mosque Association in Beaverton. It's kind of hard to look back with Emily's work, but I'll cut it short since we are given 3 minutes. My telling you are examples on the impact that Emily has given the Muslim community. When on the funeral and Emily's coffin passed by me, I kissed my right hand and I put it in her coffin. And I said, You'll always be with us in spirit and we'll carry your legacy. Excuse me. What I'm going to say is the first one was when she put my big fat face in hijab in the front page of the Jewish Journal. I was reading for 15 minutes the names of the Holocaust victim. It meant a lot to me, but as if I was running for an office or something, because I was getting emails and phone calls. And it was such a positive thing she did, that this Muslim woman in the front page of the Jewish Journal with the Star of David in my background. That was amazing, amazing, in my community. For them, this shows the tolerance that Emily has started, and until now, I'm still doing it. And the second one is, she has broken the ice. During Ramadan, during iftar dinners, Islamic teachings and Islamic tradition, we don't have songs. And Emily is equivalent to singing and her guitar. She travels Jaffa to carry her guitar wherever. She came, she wanted to join to break our fast. This is 300 people. And it was not in the program. And she said, Salma, I want to sing. And I said, okay, we don't have singing, but you know, you're the president, you can decide. So I just went in the stage and I said, we welcome Emily, he's a friend, and he's a Jew, and he's going to sing for us. And this is fasting month, to break the fast. She went out there, I didn't tell anyone, not one in the board, or shadow his president. She sung her heart out. And everyone was stunned. And for me, that was the most positive thing that she did coming into the Muslim community. And the last one that I would like to say, she pioneered the poster piece, We Serve Together, in the Human Rights Council of Washington County. Her project is to encourage the children to be creative on how they can express human rights as an art. And the first year, thanks goodness I wasn't one of the judges, I refused to, 9 Muslims were winners. Her theme was amazing. The first one is human rights starts with me. The next year, human rights is my right. Again, I refused to be the judge because all the time the Muslim kids, they love this. These are the impact that she has given the Muslim community. I won't say more about what they have said because she did the same thing to the Muslim community. If I have to describe or award Emily something, I would say she's a woman that made a difference in the Muslim community. She have made a difference in the Jewish community. She have made a difference in all other faith. Whatever she does it with passion. So SCR3 will make that difference. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you very much, all of you. That was eloquent. And we have three more people, and I'll call them as the panel, and that is Barbara O'Hare, Philip Kennedy Wong, and I'm sorry if I'm going to butcher this name, Whale Kalia Kalika. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Chair Rosenbaum of the committee and other distinguished members of this panel. Good morning, first of all, and I'm honored to have been asked to briefly speak about a cherished friend and an extraordinary individual, Mrs. Emily Georges Gottfried. Emily was a woman of action and moved in a direction that mattered. She saw the common human thread in all of us. I met her 14 years ago while serving on the board of Oregon Uniting during a Jewish and Black dialogue. And from the Black community came Black activist and business leaders. From the Jewish community came lawyers and rabbis. No pressure in those dialogues. Those dialogues were defining moments for both communities. The day Emily passed, I composed an ode to Emily, and I'll read it. And don't worry, it's not very long. And before I read it, I just want to recall a couple of events. 10 years ago, there was a big fat blowout on the Portland Public School Board, and it was between an Ashkenazi Jew and a Caribbean black. And the first thing Emily does is she calls our executive director at Oregon United, and she says, okay, guys, we're both from those communities. What can we do? Out of that came an inter-Portland Public School dialogue, and it was a start. It didn't cure everything, but it was certainly a start for the kind of work that's happening right now. Another time I was with Emily, and she said, I simply haven't done enough. This was like 4 years ago, and so I took something from the Jewish community, and I said, so what are we, chopped liver? She does so much stuff. And she said, oh, I just haven't done enough. And I said, well, then that makes the rest of us big-time slackers. So this is the ode I composed. It's called A Beautiful Concept. Once again, we are confounded with the unexplainable, swift departure of more than a loved one. Emily had the insight others couldn't even hallucinate about. She created a bridge between and amongst Jews, Muslims, Mormons, Catholics, Buddhists, and Christians. She created a bridge between blacks and whites. She created a bridge between U.S. citizens and those of other nations, and particularly between individuals that probably thought they had absolutely nothing in common. Sometimes Emily would start explaining some of her community activities to me, and I would respond with, seriously, Emily, that sounds like a beautiful dream of the 60s with recreational drugs. So, Emily, you say you're from that sometimes conservative city of Portland, and we agree. It's no bastion of liberal thinking all the time. And you say you attended Wilson High School. We know that's a school of privilege. You say you were raised as a Reformed Jew, but we've been to the mosque, no? And you don't say it, but you are a child of great privilege, and still, you care about others that are not. Your concept worked. For 10 years, I attended the interdenominational Passover Seder, attended by priests, nuns, ministers, monks, and rabbis, and Nazarenes. That's what I am. I'm a Nazarene preacher's kid. Your concept worked with Oregon Uniting, or at least it was a great start with the facilitation amongst the Portland Public School Board members and members of the black community about race issues. Your concept worked when you said, when some of us Jews say, never again on our watch, that includes African genocide too, you know. So the Oregon Jewish Committee will be raising funds for Darfur and the Boys of Sudan. Your concept worked. The Yom HaShoah reading of the names of Jews that died in the Holocaust is always read by numerous Jewish people and people from non-Jewish communities at Pioneer Square. My hope is that that tradition continues so we never forget the inhumanities of war in Europe against Jews. Your concept of extending a friendship beyond high and goodbye worked. Your family, you and Jeff, treated my family like family and introduced us to Kristallnacht, Yom HaShoah, Passover, Purim, Sukkot, Shabbat, Hanukkah, Yom Kippur, good latkes, and excellent herosis. Your family's customs, values, drives, and respectfulness will never be forgotten by this black Christian. 4 years ago when you said, I hadn't done enough, it appears that you have completed the work that you were sent here to do, and perhaps you've done some of ours. So now we're up to bat. If we can continue to sow the seeds of respect, understanding, integrity, equity, and friendship, Oregon will continue to be a beacon, not only of the Pacific Northwest, but of the United States. This resolution of memoriam is so appropriate for all that you have accomplished. Well done, thy good and faithful servant.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, Philip Kennedy Wong, representing Oregon Food Bank, and I'm actually finding it kind of hard to find the right words after hearing very eloquently from friends of Emily Gottfried, who, you know, it's been clear what a profound influence she's had on them, but also the state of Oregon. And before I begin with my remark, my formal remarks, I do want to thank Senator Rosenbaum and her staff, Megan Osborne, for helping to facilitate the drafting of this resolution for a friend of mine. Oregon Food Bank is grateful to Emily Gottfried's service in fighting hunger in the state of Oregon on many, many different levels, from her activism within the faith community to also her service on the board advocacy committee, where she served for 5 years, helping to guide the legislative priorities for Oregon Food Bank, helping us to look at various ways in which we can address the root causes of hunger. She also was active within the social services community, so it wasn't just policy, but it was also action. She served on the Emergency Food and Shelter Board, which is a body designated by the federal government in which federal dollars would go to churches and other social services to deal with families who are experiencing poverty or an emergency such as a financial crisis. She also, as mentioned earlier, helped to co-found the Oregon Faith Roundtable Against Hunger, which I was very privileged to be a part of at the time when I was working for Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. And I can attest to you of the many, many meetings we had putting together the bylaws of the organization and then the subsequent activities and that followed, in which our inaugural event was hosting Governor Ted Kulongoski at the time, and then followed up shortly the following year with having U.S. Senator Gordon Smith. That these activities were well attended and took a lot of legwork. And in all of these planning meetings, Emily Gottfried was always the first one to volunteer herself and her staff as well to helping make sure that these early events of this very important gathering of interfaith leaders would go well. And I'm happy to say that 10 years have passed since that time, and the Oregon Faith Roundtable Against Hunger is still going very, very strong. And then lastly, since since you've heard from many, and I'm going to sort of bridge my comments, I do want to say just a personal note, and that's to thank Jeff, Miriam, and Benna for sharing their wife and mother with me, because it was through the last 10 years of my life having to work with her in different capacities where I've deepened my understanding of what it means to be a person of faith, and second, also be a stronger advocate just based on the inspiration that Emily provided to all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Wael Khalifa. I'm a member of the ISGP board, Islamic Society of Greater Portland. When I signed up at the door, I was not prepared that I'll be sitting here at this panel, so I don't have a written speech. I'm also a father of two Boy Scouts and a Girl Scouts and a unit commissioner with Boy Scouts of America. So I came unprepared to give a testimony. However, I wish I knew Emily more earlier in life than I met her 4 or 5 years ago. In a nutshell, she represented everything that my values personally and the values that I share in the organization, so would it be the ISGP board or even Boy Scouts of America. She is just a representative of all these values. When I first met her and second met her, I thought she was a rabbi. But it didn't turn to be so. And I wonder, why isn't everybody like Emily? She doesn't see like everybody else, but she is doing what everybody else should be doing. And I was always pleased to meet her, to get acquainted with her, and I learned a lot more after her passing away than during her lifetime. And again, I wish I knew her 30, 40 years ago. Unfortunately, she passed away. It's a great loss for our community. By this, I mean the entire whole state of Oregon and the world. She could have been a Mother Teresa if she had the time to go, or the Dalai Lama, who knows. Emily represented everything mankind should be in our real world. And I'll miss her. So, thank you for listening.
Thank you all. And that completes our sign-up list. Is there anyone else here who wanted to testify on SCR 3? Yes, if you could come forward.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. My name is John Moss. I'm the interim executive director of the Oregon Area Jewish Committee. I have the unfortunate role of trying to fill Emily's shoes at this moment. I was also the president of the Oregon Area Jewish Committee for the last few years while Emily was serving as the executive director. I don't have prepared testimony either, but I can add to everything that has been said, and it is very much a testimony to the excellence as a human being that Emily was. She had an unusual effect, and sitting there now in the office, sitting in Emily's chair, I can tell you something that others wouldn't necessarily know, and that is that Emily was a key part of the infrastructure of the city of Portland and the community itself in a way that she was part of the nerve center that communicated and made good deeds contagious in our community. It's after her passing, the phone would regularly ring from different organizations that you've heard all from. Who has the password for the website? Who has the listserv that makes all of the addresses, because we can't communicate with everybody? Who knows where the supplies are for this? Emily was the quintessential volunteer, and when we say that the Oregon Area Jewish Committee was the ambassador for the Jewish people, Emily was the face, and she was the persona that we dream everyone would perceive our people with. I mean, she was that good, but she was so strong in carrying the load, not just for our people, but in every organization that she was part of. I worry now, because one will never be able to really replace Emily, but it's become very clear that the organizations that Emily has passed through, each of them has suffered, not just because they've lost one person, but they've lost the key person, the linchpin person, the person that actually made things occur and made them occur successfully. I've noticed a drop in confidence, and I hope everybody will step up and re-embrace these things, because Emily was the one that knew how to do everything and others don't know how to do everything. For her to be honored by the state is something that I expect, hopefully, that you guys will approve. But I also believe that it's an example. In her passing, we really, you know, one of the things that was said during the memorial service was the idea of what would Emily do? And that's a question that we ask ourselves regularly. And actually, you know, she was worried that she wouldn't be remembered. I'm hoping that the spirit that she has creates a level of immortality that and inspiration for all of us to be better. I think, and I said it earlier, Emily made good deeds fashionable. Emily made being good to each other and caring in a better society contagious. And I hope that you honor that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you all for those beautiful words. I Just wanted to mention, too, that we received written testimony from Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici, who knew and loved Emily very much. And I remember speaking to Suzanne shortly after Emily's passing about just the huge rift and blow that it was to so many people, including Suzanne. So we want to add her words to the record. And I just want to say that I mean, I'm one of the lives, I think, that was touched just at a distance by this wonderful woman. I knew her and met her at the reading of the names on Holocaust Remembrance Day more than once, and saw her at the Hunger Breakfasts and heard her play her guitar. And I know that it, when a life is cut short so suddenly and so unexpectedly, it has left this unbelievable rift that seems impossible to bear and in some ways impossible to fill. But it's clear, I think, in the way that she's been brought to life just this morning by your voices, that she brought so much goodness to this world, so much compassion, a strong voice for social justice and for tolerance, her faith, her love, her joy, her music, all those things that touched so many people have clearly made a stronger and better world for all of us. And so I want to just reach out to you, Jeff, and to your daughters and express our huge grief and just sharing in a small way your sense of loss. And the small thing that we can do with this resolution by remembering her is really an honor and a privilege for us. Her memory truly is a blessing in ways that I don't think any of us can realize now and into the future. So thank you for being here today. And Senator Farioli, we are in a work session, and we do have an amendment.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated April 15th, 2013, which further enumerate some of the contributions that Ms. Gottfried made in her community outreach efforts.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved the Dash 1 amendment to SCR 3. Is there any discussion, any objection to the amendment? The amendment is adopted. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, in an honor of a life well lived, I move the adoption of a Senate concurrent resolution 3 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved Senate concurrent resolution 3 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? The motion carries. And I think we will figure out a carrier when we discuss with the chief sponsors. So thank you, everyone, for being here today. And I'll close the public hearing and work session on SCR 3. Thank you. And next, I will open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 146. And members, I know you have a lot of files in front of you, so I'll give you a minute to put this one on top. And Lori, would you please tell us about this bill?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 146 revises and realigns the statutory language relating to qualification and maintenance of a minor political party. There is a Dash 1 that should be attached to your hard copy of the SMS. And the Dash 1 essentially replaces the measure, still has the realignment and revisions of statutory language, and it also revises the requirement for qualification and maintenance of the minor political party to include, or adds to it, a candidate polling at least 1% of total votes cast in an electoral district at least once in a four-year period. There's no revenue impact. We are waiting for the fiscal impact on the Dash 1s.
Okay, thank you, Lori. We have a few people signed up to testify, and so I'll call Steve Trout first, if you'd like to come forward. Good morning. Welcome back to the Rules Committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Steve Trout, State Election Director. I'm happy to be here this morning to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 146 and specifically the Dash 1 amendments. Really what this does, the only real substantive change is in the way that minor parties maintain their status. Currently, there's a two-prong approach. Either the party can have one-half of 1% of the number of registered voters in the state, and if they achieve that level anytime before the next election, then they can maintain their qualification. We're not making any changes to that prong of the qualification process. The other prong is a two-step process that requires 0.1% of the votes for governor at the last election as being registered with the minor party, which is obviously a smaller number than the first prong. And then also that minor party have a candidate that achieves at least 1% of the vote in the previous election. And what this bill does is moves it from every 2 years from each general election and allows it to be 1% at any election during a four-year cycle. So, for example, if someone wants to runs for Secretary of State, which is only up every 4 years and gets over 1% of the ballot or 1% of the vote for Secretary of State, under the current law, in the next general election, that 1% vote wouldn't help them to maintain their party status, and under this bill it will extend that to 4 years so that even in those 4 year office terms that those votes for that office can be used to maintain minor party status under that second prong. So that's really the substance of this bill, along with some clarifying language and some things submitted by council, and be happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Trout? Yes, go ahead, Senator Starr.
Thank you. Is there a circumstance that precipitated this bill? I mean, or was there a period of time when a minor party that didn't get the 1% in a statewide election? And was there a specific instance that precipitated this bill?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Starr, there was some concern leading up to the 2012 cycle of one of the parties that was in danger of not maintaining their qualification, and so there was a lot of discussion about whether that should be that 2 year cycle or the 4 year cycle for that 1% of the vote to count. You know, the interpretation and opinion that we got from the Attorney General's office and our review was that it was only a 2 year cycle, and so this is to expand that to the 4 year cycle. The party in question before 2012 ended up getting enough registered voters under the first prong that it didn't end up being an issue, but that was what helped to facilitate us coming here.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Okay, thank you very much for your testimony.
You're
and
technical question, Madam Chair.
Did you have an additional question?
No, I have a question. It's
go
not
ahead.
An additional question. What is 0.5% in a general election, in rough numbers?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, 0.5% in general terms, I think right now, and again, this is where it gets so when it's 0.5%, it's of registered voters, not votes for governor. So that approximate number right now is about 11,000. So the 0.1% of the votes for governor, I believe, is around 3,000.
Madam Chairman, under those regulations, I think it's possible that Daffy Duck might be a write-in that may get more than 3,000 votes in Oregon. We have some protest votes that are Disney characters. And have any of them got more than 3,000 votes in the election?
So, and Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, on that, those are registered voters that have filled out the registration form and marked that. That would be that 3,000 in addition to a candidate that receives 1% of the
thanks
vote.
Thanks for that clarification.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, Daffy.
Okay. I don't see any, so thank you very much for your testimony. And next I'll call Blair Bubbier and Seth Woolley.
Trust me.
Good morning. Thanks for waiting so patiently. And please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Blair Bubbier. Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, I'm here to testify in support of this. I've been a member of the Oregon State Bar for 25 years. I taught political science at Western Oregon University, and I've done extensive research and writing about election laws. My writing has appeared a number of times in the Oregonian, USA Today, the Los Angeles Times, and another dozen or two newspapers. The issue before the committee today is about ballot access for the smaller political parties, and I look at it as a way of kind of measuring the health of a democracy and how easy it is for alternative voices to participate in the democratic system. What this bill does is just basically extends the period of time from 2 to 4 years that parties can maintain their status on the ballot. I believe that the minor political parties are fairly unanimous in their support of this measure. I believe it'll make things easier for the state. It makes it less of an administrative nightmare for the state to have to qualify and deal with the qualifications of political parties every 2 years. I should just point out that in off-presidential years, in other words, the election cycle when there isn't the presidential election, it can be somewhat difficult for the parties to recruit statewide candidates and run them at the statewide level and get that 1% because there just aren't that many statewide offices up for election in those off years. Minor political parties have a fair amount of support and strength in the state that actually surpass the numbers that are reflected. The Pacific Green Party members include a new judge appointed in Benton County, and the president of the Corvallis City Council. Our members have served on city councils throughout Oregon. I believe this bill is good for the democratic process, good for the state of Oregon, good for the minor political parties, and I urge that you send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Hi, Madam Chair and Vice Chair and members of the committee. I'm Seth Woolley. I was the candidate for Secretary of State in 2012 and 2008 of the Pacific Green Party, and one of the Pacific Green Party was the party involved that was mentioned before about the specific problem of whether or not four-year or two-year qualification is how to read the statute. And I actually sued to make clear that the law did actually say four-year qualification was what it says. And that's still my opinion. I still believe that the law actually does say it's 4 years, or even 6 years in the case of U.S. Senate. The you can read the lawsuit language, the initial filing at least, covering that particular case. The amendment is the one that deals with that issue. The original bill, the original SB 146. Also was going to deal with another aspect of the lawsuit, and that's whether or not parties may be able to shrink their election districts. The Socialist Party had that happen a few times, and so the Secretary of State had repeatedly shrunk minor parties so that they could still maintain qualification where they did get more than 1%, and they changed their interpretation, citing the Attorney General about that. The original bill had a clause to deal with that, but it's been removed from the amendment. I would rather not see that clause in the original bill put in because it's more restrictive, although that doesn't change the current interpretation of the Secretary of State. There is a potential problem with Section 8 of the amended the offered amendment. And that is that it's rather awkward, and it appears to require a factual inquiry into the subjective motive of the party cross-nominating any candidate. It could be interpreted as precluding cross-nomination, and so it would be good if the Secretary of State clarified that they offer the amendment with no such intent. So those are the three main points I wanted to bring up.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you both for your testimony. And members, we do have Legislative Council. I'm sure they're listening to us to clarify any ambiguity. Oh, are they in the room?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Look at that. Thank you.
And watching.
Yes, watching and listening. So if you'd like to come forward and clarify, I don't know, members, does anyone feel they need clarification on that language? It looks like we think it's pretty clear. So, okay. Thank you. We do not have the fiscal still on this bill. We could adopt this amendment into the bill, however, which would at least save us time the next time we come back to it, or we could just deal with the whole thing when we get the fiscal. So, okay, I don't see a motion, so.
No, I have one.
You do have a motion?
Yeah. Yep.
Senator Farioli?
You want to do it?
Madam Chair, I think it's a matter of course to have a no fiscal impact, if that's the case, before we move.
Sure.
We can be careful.
Yeah, we can wait until we get the fiscal since we can't move the bill today anyway. So I will close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 146. And moving right along.
We don't have fiscal 145 either.
Right. So
we do have the other two.
56.
56 testifying.
150.
Yeah. So I'll open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 150. And Mike, too, if you could maybe let Senator Olson know that we'll go to Senate Bill 148 next.
He's 596.
Oh, I'm sorry. I keep doing that. Senate Bill 596 next. Okay, great. So, Lori, tell us about this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 150 increases the maximum civil penalty for violation of election law rule from 250 to 1,000, eliminates the requirement that certain ballots be printed in different colors, and there also is a dash 2 attached to your hard copy SMS that increases the time allowed for mailing of ballots to 20 days before the date of election. We just received, thanks to legislative fiscal, we had the no revenue impact on the dash 2s. We just received a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued. That should have been distributed to you.
Great. Thank you very much, Lori. And it looks like we have Steve Trapp again. You should probably just stay in the front row, and you wouldn't have so far to come. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director. I need the exercise. So, happy to be here on Senate Bill 150, which is pretty simple, as the committee administrator just shared with you. It really has three primary objectives. The first is to remove the current requirement that in primary elections, the two major parties have different color printed ballots, which was really important back in polling place days when we had poll workers that had to give the party ballot to the correct person. It's not as important now, and what this bill does is removes the requirement that they be printed in separate colors, but leaves it up to the discretion of the county to as to whether they want to differentiate that. The ballots are currently easy to differentiate with different ballot styles and numbers, so there's no risk that they're going to be mixed up in the tally process or any of that. So it's really an administrative convenience for them. The reason to remove this requirement is that it costs an extra 5 cents per ballot to print in color, and in the vast majority of our counties, 3 cents in those that have a different voting system. And I think you have testimony and support from the Clerks Association, which spells out that that cost and the reasons for the savings there. The second provision increases the penalty from $250 to $1,000 for violations under 260995. Really, this is to bring this penalty into alignment with other penalties that we assess so that it's easier to understand. Our penalty matrix isn't as complex, and that there's consistency there with our penalty matrix. And then finally, with the dash 2 amendments, it increases the time window
for counties to mail ballots from the current window of 18 to 14 days, which is the Friday through, which is you can't mail any sooner than Friday. This would back that up 2 days to say that you can't mail any sooner than the Wednesday. The reason for that is with the closure of some of the postal sorting facilities and the on-again, off-again discussion of doing away with Saturday mail delivery, we wanted to give the counties the opportunity to mail those ballots a couple days early so that all of our voters could get their ballots before that weekend so that they'd still have those three full weekends to be able to review, mark, and return those ballots. So it's just opening up, adding an extra 2 days for the mailing window for those ballots to be mailed. That's what this bill does, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Trout? Go ahead, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The fine goes from $250 to a maximum of $1,000. Who is the beneficiary of the fine? Where does the revenue go?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, the general fund.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, Mr. Trout and I have discussed the question. Most of these fines are paid by the PAC itself. So it really, the deterrent, I think, is more in the fact that a political action committee is subject to a fine. And that's published. It's public information. And people know that you've made an accounting or a reporting error. The amount goes to the general fund. That's fine. But since these are PAC funds, usually donated dollars, it may be more of a public embarrassment than it is a real pain, you know, that acts as a deterrent. And I'm not sure raising this fine to $1,000 acts as any greater deterrent. You're still going to have people making clerical errors and calendar errors and oversights. So, you know, as a PAC tax, it's fine. As a deterrent, I don't think it operates to a greater effect than a $250 fine. It's just as embarrassing to have a $250 violation as a $1,000 violation. I'll support the amendment, but I'm really not sure that there'll be any greater deterrent by raising that fine. It doesn't help defray the expenses of the department or make the electoral process any more open or affordable. So I'm not really sure why we're doing it.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Senator Burdick.
How long has the $250 fine been in effect? Because it is kind of unusual to quadruple a fine like that. How long have we had $250?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, I don't know the exact date that was implemented, but I know that it has been at $250 for at least 5 years. And I know that when a number of those penalties were adjusted, and most of them went to that minimum of $1,000, and that's what we have in our penalty matrix, that this was one that was not included. I don't know whether that was intentional or not, but you know, the real value to us in this is having a more standardized penalty matrix, so that if you violate an election statute, you know, the fine's going to be $1,000 instead of having to say, well, if it's under this subsection, then it's $250. If it's under this section, then it's $1,000. And if it's under this section, it's something different. And so that's the real purpose of what we're trying to do here.
And follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Senator Brady.
Do you have flexibility in this particular section of the statute to not levy the whole $1,000? Because obviously there are mistakes that are completely inadvertent. And it's
so, Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, we have what we call mitigating circumstances within our rules that allow us some flexibility with respect to those, with respect to whether we issue the fine or the penalty at all, and so there is limited flexibility for us in these situations.
But to follow up, do you have the flexibility to you said to issue it at all, but do you have the flexibility to reduce it?
So Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, currently under the rules and the statutes, that that penalty is set. So if they don't meet one of the mitigating circumstances to eliminate it, or if the ALJ doesn't reduce it on their own, then no, that's the penalty that would go forward.
Okay. Additional questions, Senator Starr.
Thank you. Can you give me just a handful of examples of what kinds of fines? What kinds of circumstances would constitute the fine at $250 today?
Right. So, Madam Chair, Senator Starr, I appreciate that question, because the fiscal office asks how many of these cases that we've really had, and so over the last two biennium, we've had I believe three cases that fell under this section. So, it's not something that's highly used or highly penalized. Part of these could be under our guidelines in ORS 26432, which is use of public funds for campaigning and the prohibitions on that. We could issue penalties under that for some in some of those circumstances where public officials may be campaigning on government time, and we have complaints on that. Those are the three that I'm aware of that have happened in the last biennium.
Additional question?
Well, your answer wasn't real clear. Can you give me just clearly specify what section are you talking about? What kinds of what kinds of circumstances constitute this particular fine? And it wasn't exactly clear what you just said to me.
Okay. So I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Starr, I'll try to be more precise. The one that this applies to are those cases, the ones that we would see them and the ones that we have penalized under, are those where a public employee may have done campaign activities or some advocacy for or against a measure on government time instead of their own time, and so clearly that's a violation of the statutes here, and so that's where this section and the penalties of it would mostly apply.
Madam Chair, that seems more like a violation of ethics as opposed to a violation of election law. Going back to Senator Ferrioli's comments, those individuals wouldn't necessarily have a PAC if it's a public employee that's campaigning on public time. He's going to end up, or she, are going to end up paying that penalty out of their own back pocket, not out of a political action committee. If you're a school employee and you send out an email supporting the local school levy while you're working or from your work computer, is that the kind of example you're talking about?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, yes.
Well, that solidifies my opposition to the bill.
Okay, thank you, Senator Starr. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. We do now have Senator Olson in the room, and I know he's been back and forth, so I am going to, do I need to temporarily close this and open on the other bill, or can I just open on the other bill? We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 150 and open a public hearing for the purposes of taking Senator Olson's testimony on Senate Bill 596. Thank you for running up and down the stairs.
Not a problem. Thank you very much, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Ferrioli, and members of the committee. My name is Alan Olson. I represent Senate District 20, which runs from Charbonneau to Estacada and from Gladstone to Molino, the heart of Clackamas County. Wonderful place. Senate Bill 596 is a bill that I brought forward. Very simple. It's a transparency bill. We've all been in this building a long time, and we know that when amendments come up, you wonder where they come from. This bill states if you write an amendment, you put your name on it, very simply. We have 25 senators that have agreed with me, and we have 40 House members, so that's a bicameral, bipartisan bill that says write an amendment, put your name on there. We will be able to openly discuss what your amendment is, and Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were pointing at me. And you'll be openly able to discuss the amendment with the person. If you have a question, you can easily contact them and say, I've got a question on your amendment. Could you please explain the changes? Many times I've had to read an entire amendment to find a one-word change. I think this provides transparency not only to the legislative body, but to the state itself, so that they understand where the amendments come from and what they're for. And I'd be glad to take any questions.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. And I'm sorry, Lori, if I didn't let you explain this,
no,
did
great.
I?
The yeah. Senator did. Absolutely.
He did a great job.
I defer,
Senator. Absolutely. Any questions for Senator Olson? I do not see it.
Madam Chair, maybe the administrator would like to explain the bill so everybody could understand it.
No, you did a great job. Yeah. And unless you would like me to do so, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to.
But no, I think that's
okay.
Great.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for
Olson.
Your time. I appreciate the time.
And I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 596. We open the public hearing on Senate Bill 150, and it looks like we have three people signed up to testify, and I'm going to call them all, and they are Janice Deisinger, Sandy Rodney, and Gordon Morrison, if the three of you would like to come forward. And we do want to hear your testimony, but I do also want to let you know that we are due in floor session soon. So we're going to ask you to try to summarize your testimony as much as possible. Please say your name and go ahead and tell us what you want us to know.
Hi, I'm Janice Deisinger, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for hearing me, Senator Rosenbaum, and Vice Chair Senator Ferrioli. I basically would just like to urge you, I thought there was an amendment to the bill from Representative Esquivel. I haven't heard of that in here, but if there's an amendment, I would like to be in support of that from him.
Yeah, and we haven't gotten any word of an amendment. So we only have the amendment that you heard about
basically
earlier.
Basically, that the penalties, I don't believe, go far enough, that the amendments that he would propose would be better. And I think it would be more practical to have the colors in the ballots on the Section 1, especially on a recount. I think that would be a more practical way to recount the ballots. I understand Mr. Trout said that their ballot styles were different. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Go ahead.
My name is Gordon Morrison. I hadn't anticipated on testifying regarding this bill, but I did hear.
Then we may have had a miscommunication.
No, it's okay. I put my name on at the last minute. There was one amendment that I had an issue with, and that was the pushing the mailing date back 2 days. There's some issues with the vote-by-mail system as far as its integrity is concerned in the public eye, and I just feel uncomfortable with having the ballots out there preemptively another 2 days. I'd rather wait to see if we have issues with the mailing system, you know, if we lose postal service, you know, on Saturdays or something, which I really don't think is that big a deal as far as getting the ballots out there on time. So that's just one amendment that I have an issue with. The rest of it sounds fine to me. That's it.
Okay. Thank you. And just to clarify, I think there are now closures slated for the sorting centers around Oregon, including the one here in Salem just down the street. So yeah. I think the concern is in part that just getting the ballots, particularly in rural areas, to where they need to go is going to take longer because of that. So
I understand your point, ma'am. I would actually push it further forward so there's less time for the ballots to be out there so that they can, I'd prefer them not to have more opportunity to be manipulated. That's my personal take on it.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
If I may just say, I know Ms. Radu went to go see what was happening to the amendment with with Representative Esquivel.
Okay.
So,
thank you for that clarification. Okay, and I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 150.
Heard on the 10th of April.
Right.
So it depends on the members and you.
So, members, let's stand at ease for just a moment. Okay, I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 148. And Lori, we heard this previously. Could you give us an update?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 148 was before you on the 10th of April. And unless any member wants me to do so, I will move from the summary that you heard that day directly to the Dash 2 amendment, which is how the proponents would like the measure to move. And the Dash 2 is attached to your hard copy SMS. It requires the chief petitioner to ensure the criminal records check is conducted for a paid signature gatherer applicant. It allows either chief petitioner or applicant to conduct that check. So that was in the Dash 1s that you did look at on the 10th, and then adds it requires only one criminal records check per biennial general election period. So Legislative Council has provided a clarification as to how often those records checks need to be done. And we just received from Legislative Fiscal a minimal fiscal impact no statement issued. I distributed that to you. And we already had from Legislative Revenue the no revenue impact statement on the measure and the amendment.
Okay, members, so we heard this previously. We do have a Dash 2 amendment, and I apologize for the flurry of paperwork, but as we have been trying to get things ready to go, this one became ready even as we were hearing earlier measures. So we are in a work session. Are there any questions or clarifications needed before we go to a motion? Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment. Dash 2 amendment.
Thank you. Senator Farrioli has moved the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 148.
Thank you.
Any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Okay, amendment is adopted. Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I move the Senate Bill 148 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farrioli has moved Senate Bill 148 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. And we need a carrier, and hopefully we will get a volunteer since I think I'm carrying three bills today on the floor. I don't want to hog all the glory. So is there a volunteer to carry this on the floor? Senator
Starr?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Great. Okay.
Couldn't lean back far enough so you could get a clear shot at Senator Burdick.
Okay, Senator Starr will carry this on the floor, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 148. Okay, so let's... it's like a three-ring circus today. Let's reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 150 for the purpose of taking testimony. And we will call Sandy Radu.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sandy Radu from Beaverton, Oregon. I apologize for this. I just wanted to let you know there is a Dash 3 amendment that has just come out. I was over at Legislative Council picking up a printout. It's currently in Representative Esquivel's inbox, and we'll get to you as soon as he's out of his meetings. I think we all agree, I think all Americans agree, that we want fair and honest, accurate elections, and we want the process and results to be the same. Although I'm here on my own behalf, I'm also the state GOP election integrity chair. But election integrity is not a party issue. The intent of this amendment, which is right here, serves as a way to help attain these goals by instituting penalties appropriate to the crimes that may be committed by those trying to change the honesty of our election process. Senate Bill 150 does address some of these penalties. This amendment, which had previously been part of House Bill 3505, addresses more of those penalties and more of those possible infractions. Just one example, changing ORS 260-705 penalty, which is the early release of election results. Currently, if election results are released early, it is a $250 civil fine. Now, I think PACs and election committees and things like that would probably gladly pay that if that information was available. What this amendment proposes, for example, would change releasing election results to a Class C felony with a possible 5 years imprisonment and a $125,000 fine, which I think suits the client better than a $250 fine. Again, it's a nonpartisan issue. I think everybody wants things to be fair, open, and honest, and that we do have some gaps in our law that would allow things like this to happen and with virtually no penalty. Additionally, the removal of the requirement in the original Senate Bill 150, the removal of the requirement for different colored ballots for the major political parties is unnecessary and will make any recounts of those primary ballots very expensive unless they're always handled separately. I understand the 5 cents or 3 cents per printing effort for the colored paper, but if you have ever been in an election office observing a recount election, the majority of the time during a primary is separating the ballots and what party they're for, and the coloring makes that much easier and much quicker to do as opposed to keeping them separate all through the election counting process. I know that there are some discussions about eliminating separate party primaries, and if that should happen at that time, I would suggest this requirement be for colored paper be removed at that time, but not now, because it will make things like mandatory recounts specified by the Secretary of State much more difficult. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. And I'm going to call Gina Zedlick. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gina Zedlick, Legislative Director for Secretary of State Kate Brown. I just wanted to quickly clarify, I think the Elections Director, Steve Trout, when he was testifying earlier on Senate Bill 150 that we're talking about, as you know, we have so many bills up today. I think everyone's thinking of all these different sections, and I just want to clarify as to Senator Starr's question and Senator Burdick's question that the $1,000 penalty is a maximum. The Secretary of State does have discretion in imposing that, and it applies, it's sort of the catch-all. There are specific penalties for specific statutes. The $1,000 is for anything, the $1,000 maximum would be for any violation not specifically covered, so violation of any election law or rule. It would have to go through a complaint process, and then that would be the fine that could be imposed, a maximum of $1,000. I just wanted to clarify.
Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead, Senator.
So you do have discretion to impose a lesser amount?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, yes.
Thank you. Okay, any questions for Ms. Zedlick? I don't see any. Okay. Thank you. And
I'm actually opposed to
committee will stand in recess. And I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 150. And I think, members, because we have to be on the floor shortly, we're going to adjourn shortly. I just want to mention to the members that we are going to need a little flexibility in terms of scheduling as we move forward, as more bills are moving into the Rules Committee and floor sessions are starting earlier and lasting longer. We may need to alter our schedule a little bit, start earlier and meet on certain other days. We're still in discussion with the Senate President's office about what days those would be. So we'll attempt to give you as much notice as we possibly can for any adjustments we need to make. And thanks in advance for your flexibility. Okay, and members, with nothing further to come before us today, we are adjourned.